Put my glasses on here. Let's see. Okay. Well, good morning, and welcome everyone to our Sunday morning worship service. We're glad you're here. And our study this quarter is on women in the Bible. So the first week we looked at roles of women in the Bible. Last week we looked at Eve. And this week we're going to look at Sarah. So I apologize for not getting the questions out to you last week. I do have the ones for next week now. My printer went out last week, and unfortunately I got caught at work Wednesday night, so I was unable to get them to you because of that. We'll try to stay ahead of the game and hopefully have no more malfunctions with my software and programs here. So anyway, appreciate your patience and appreciate your participation in the study and the class. So before we begin, I'm going to ask Brother Mark Pence if he would. He's not even here, is he? Okay, there he is. He's back in the back. Mark, would you lead us in a word of prayer, please? Amen. Go ahead and pass them out. Start from the rear. I'll start over here. I'm going to pass out the questions for this week, and then I'll pass out the ones for next week when I get them off the copier in the back. This lesson may be a two-part lesson. There's a lot we can study about in Sarah, so it may be 2 weeks or a week and a half. So some of them are stapled. The ones I passed out were stapled. I got those stapled. The other ones are not, so sorry about that. Hopefully you can keep them together. Okay, so we're going to begin our study today of Sarah. And as I mentioned earlier, there's a lot said in the Bible about Sarah as we read in Genesis and also various passages in the New Testament. Little background on Sarah. Her name means princess or my princess. When they changed her name in Genesis chapter 17, her name changed to princess. So basically the same meaning. She's a descendant of Seth, who was the son of Adam, and Shem, who was the son of Noah. She was a daughter of Terah, and also, of course, Abram's father was also Terah. They were half brothers, half sisters. However, not from the same mother. She married Abraham while in the land of Ur, in the Chaldees. We read in Genesis chapter 11, verses 29 through 31. She was childless. She was barren. And this is one of the big things that plagued her really throughout her life, really. You know, it kind of was depressing for Sarah during that time. It caused her to do some things that she probably wouldn't have done, and we'll talk about that as well. But back in that culture, if you couldn't have children, you know, it wasn't a good thing. And even today, technically, it's not a good thing, but a lot of people don't have children today compared to then. It was very important to them to have children, especially to have that male, the first son, to carry the legacy of the family. the name. So she journeyed with Abraham, as we read in Genesis 11. And Lot to Haran, and then after Terah's death, on to Canaan. We read in Genesis 11, verses 31, 12, and 5. So Sarah was 65 years old when she left the land of Ur. So she was, you know, getting older in age. And Abraham was 75. Abraham was basically 10 years older than Sarah. And the reason we can find it out is because in Genesis 17, 7, it says that Sarah was 10 years younger. It specifies that. So we know her age. We also know that she was very obedient, not only to God, but also to Abraham. She was a very loyal wife and a very loyal servant to God. She was very beautiful, as we read. It states that many times, even regardless of her age, it always associated her with beauty, right? So we can learn a lot about that as well. And this also caused some issues for her and Abraham as they traveled and journeyed to the promised land, or the land that was chosen by God. She's also the first woman to actually demonstrate hospitality, not hostility, sorry. I got a little sleep deprivation going on, so I apologize. It's been a long week. I only worked about 4 days, but felt like I worked 2 weeks. So it's been a long week. So she was the first woman to demonstrate hospitality, we read about in the Bible, as we see in Genesis 18, verse 6. You know, in that passage there, basically, when Abraham had the visitors, men of the Lord, he really came in the house, probably like we do sometimes, right, Eddie? Hey, honey, can you get this fixed real quick for us, right? And, of course, what does Sarah do? She got it done real quick and showed the hospitality. She didn't grumble about it, didn't complain. Hey, why are you doing this to me? You know, I don't have time for this and all that stuff. She went ahead and done it. And so she was probably a good cook as well. Very good. So she was also a woman of great faith. And the reason she was a woman of great faith, she's only one of two women that's actually mentioned in the book of Hebrews chapter 11. So you have Sarah and Rahab, the only two women in the Bible of great faith, mentioned in the great faith chapter, Hebrews chapter 11. And so next week we're going to look at Rahab if we get done with this lesson. So we're going to look at both women in the Hebrews chapter 11. So also, she had a son eventually, and his name was Isaac, right? And what's Isaac? Isaac's name means laughter. And the reason his name means laughter is because of what happened when the men of the Lord told Abraham that she would have a son, and she actually was listening to what they were telling him. And then when she heard it, she laughed, then she denied about the laughing, you know. So, of course, Abraham laughed too, but the difference is in the laughs, whereas Sarah was the last laugh of disbelief, and Abraham was a laugh of joy, according to what I've read. But Sarah was very happy, you know. The bottom line is, you got to look at what transpired in Sarah's life. Here she was, 65 years old, barren. Apparently, it was probably something medically wrong where she couldn't have children. So it was kind of like a God in his time, which he told them, he promised them he would bless them. But in his time. But over time, you know, after years and years goes by, you can imagine how Sarah felt, how Abraham felt, waiting for that promise to be fulfilled. So, you know, just like we today, you sometimes, if we get impatient waiting on God, we take things into our own hands. Yes, George.
You kind of say it was not a test, but a strength of her faith. So wait on, believe.
Right. She never.
Something would happen.
Exactly. She never gave up hope. You know, she really never gave up hope. Even though she didn't always. She had doubts at times. Obviously, she did, or she wouldn't have done some of the things she did. Yeah, we all have doubts, but she never gave up that hope. That's a good point. Appreciate that. It's very important for us today too, not to give up hope. You know, we may be going through things in our lives We may be waiting on the Lord for certain things, whether it be some spiritual things going on in our lives, some physical things going on in our lives. But the bottom line is, it's very important to maintain that hope, that faith, not get depressed, not leave the Lord. Because when that happens, usually bad things happen to us in our lives. Yes, George.
He also tested Abraham's faith too.
Oh, definitely. Lots of times. Abraham's faith was tested numerous times. Yeah. Well, you think about, we talked about them leaving, and you know, this is a very large, wealthy family, right? So if I came to you, George, and told you to pack your family up and, you know, leave, and I'm going to tell you where you're going when I'll tell you, right? Would you have that kind of faith to pack your stuff up and move? Correct. So Abraham had that faith to do what God told him, but also Sarah had the faith to listen to Abraham, right? When Abraham said, we're moving, what'd Sarah do? We don't read anything about, why are we doing that for? All our family or friends or everything we got is here. We don't want to move, right? So being in the military, I guess I didn't move as much as most people in the military because I happened to stay at Fort Bragg 15 years, but military is, you know, generally moves you about every 2 years, 3 years. So no one likes to move, right? Because you like to stay at home, and moving is tough. It's always a tough adjustment on the family, on everyone involved. So not fun to move. And obviously, think about, they didn't have the transportation system we have today. So theirs was on horse, chariot, or, you know, walking. So it was rough moving that. In Afghanistan, I actually saw a family moving. I think I've told you all this story before. They only had very little. They had a donkey. Everything they had as far as possessions was on the donkey. They didn't have any shoes. They were walking, you know, through the desert. Basically had a tent. And they also had a chicken on top of all that stuff on top of the donkey. So that's kind of how people move in those times and days, and even in some cases, even today in some countries where it's very poor. So that's very difficult for her to do. So Sarah lived to be 127 years old, and she was the only person in the Bible whose age at death was mentioned. Okay, and that's pretty significant as well. So she lived basically 37 years after giving birth to Isaac, which was not a very long, and Abraham lived a few more years after that. So outside of Genesis, Sarah's only mentioned one more time in the Old Testament, and that's in Isaiah 51, verse 2, if you want to turn over there real quick. Not sure why this is the only time she's mentioned. It doesn't really, we don't know, but definitely Genesis has a lot to say about Sarah and their story. So here, Isaiah the prophet said, "Look to Abraham, your father, and Sarah, and to Sarah, who bore you, for I called him alone and blessed him and increased him. So for the Lord will comfort Zion, he will comfort all her waste places, he will make her wilderness like Eden and her desert like the garden of the Lord. Joy and gladness will be found in it, thanksgiving and the voice of melody." And so she's also mentioned lots of times in the New Testament. We're going to read a couple of these passages as we go through this lesson, like in Romans 4:19, Romans 9:9, Galatians 4:21-5, where Paul talks about the allegory of the Old Covenant and New Covenant. She's also, of course, mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11. And, of course, the Apostle Peter mentions her in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 6, where she's an example of a wife and of obedience. So she's very well known throughout the scriptures. So a lot we can learn about Sarah. Okay. So we talked about a little bit about Sarah's background and her biography, and we're going to look at some scripture here in Genesis and read a few passages and use these as some examples that we can learn some lessons from. The reason I kind of want to go over a brief summary of her life is just to kind of set the context of what we're looking at as far as what we can learn from Sarah. So the four lessons I think we need to take away, or some lessons and applications, is that Sarah was the mother of Israel, physical and spiritual. And we'll study that a little bit. We just read about the physical part in Isaiah chapter 51 and verse 2. And then we'll talk about the spiritual portion in Galatians 4, 26, Romans 9 through 6, Romans 9, verse 6 through 9, where Paul uses an allegory on how he's defining the old covenant and new covenant. We talked about this one too, but she's an example of faith in Hebrews chapter 11. And she's also an example of something we are often guilty of as well, probably more times than not, or many times, maybe, hope not. I know I have in my short life, an example of the folly of taking things into your own hands rather than submitting to the will of God. Sometimes, man thinks his ways are better. He thinks his ways are higher. And that's just not true. So we'll talk about the lies that Abraham and Sarah told Pharaoh and Abimelech. And we'll talk about her plan to conceive a child, not through her, but through her handmaid, Hagar. And she's also an example of being a submissive wife to her husband. And we'll just talk about that. And this is a lesson we can take from this lesson. And, of course, we talked about the allegory that demonstrates relationships of the old law to the new in Galatians 4, 22 through 31. So now let's go back to when this all began. And let's go back to Genesis chapter 11. Genesis chapter 11. I tore my Bible. All right. Genesis chapter 11, verses 29 through 31. Then Abraham and Nahor took wives. The name of Abraham's wife was Sarah, which is spelled differently here, as you can see. And the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah, or I think it's how you pronounce it, daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and the father of Isaac. But Sarah was barren, and she had no child. And Terah took his son Abram and his grandson Lot, the son of Haran, and his daughter-in-law, Sarah, his son Abraham, Abram's wife, and they went out with him from Ur of the Chaldeans to go to the land of Canaan, and they came to Haran, and dwelt there. So the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Now, we all know a little bit about the history of Terah, I believe, but even though God saw something in Abraham and Sarah. And you know, sometimes, God always sees things we don't see, right? Because he is all-powerful, all-seeing, all-knowing. And the way God does things, sometimes the people just doesn't make any sense. Sometimes the people he chooses, you look at the people that Jesus chose to be his apostles. If you look at it from a human standpoint, it makes no sense, right? But God had a plan for Abraham and Sarah, even though Terah worshipped idols. You got to remember where they grew up, and from the time they were born to the time they left at 65 to age 75, they lived in a very, very evil community. It's probably, we think their times are rough, but their days were probably a lot harder than ours because their society was, really evil. And they were doing idol worship to Baal, sacrificing humans, doing all kinds of stuff contrary to God's teaching. This is why God, and plus there's a famine coming, we know, right? So God, was looking well ahead, even though they knew the famine was coming because God told them. So God set the conditions to put his people where he needed them to cause the outcome that he wanted, which is very important. So in Genesis chapter 12, Genesis chapter 20, verses 12, we read there that, of course, Sarah was Abraham's half-brother. And this is very important to set the context for this, because we're going to read a little bit later where Sarah and Abraham both told half-truths, told lies about who Sarah was. And why they did it was, you know, another human decision that, and it may have been some conclusion we may have came to as well. But Abraham was very afraid, because his wife was so beautiful that every king, every leader, and probably a lot of men would want her. And he was afraid they would kill him to get her, because that's the way it was back then. People were pretty ruthless. Knocked out kings, leaders. People knocked off people to get whatever they wanted. So pretty rough times. But Genesis 12, verses 11 and 14, this is where it talks about Sarah's beauty. It says, it came to pass when, let me show him the right chapter here. And when it came to pass, when he was close to entering Egypt, they said to Sarah, his wife, indeed, I know that you are a woman of beautiful countenance. And skipping down to verse 14, so it was, Abraham came to Egypt, the Egyptians saw the woman, and that she was very beautiful. So, you know, in other words, she's a woman that people were going to notice, okay? Women noticed her, men noticed her, and so it drew a lot of attention. So, not that there's anything wrong with beauty, okay? So it's not Sarah's fault that she was beautiful. There's nothing wrong with beauty. But sometimes it was a hindrance. Sometimes it can be. Sometimes it can be a blessing. You know, I've read reports about businesses and stuff, hiring practices and stuff like that. So it can sometimes benefit people. But it also can be a hindrance. So we talked about earlier that she was childless in Genesis 11:30. Okay? So now we're going to talk about Sarah's part in the lies to Pharaoh and Abimelech. And we talked about her beauty here. So let's go to Genesis chapter 12, and we're going to read verses 10 through 20. Eddie, could you read those for me? Genesis chapter 12, 10 through 20, sir. Thank you.
And there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down into Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was grievous in the land. It came to pass, when he was come near to enter into Egypt, that he said unto Sarah his wife, behold, now I know that thou art a fair woman to look upon. Therefore it shall come to pass, when the Egyptians shall see thee, that they shall say, this is his wife, and they will kill me, but they will save you alive. Say, I pray thee, that thou art my sister, that it may be well with me for thy sake, and my soul shall live because of thee. It came to pass that when Abram was come into Egypt, the Egyptians beheld the woman, that she was very fair. Princes also of Pharaoh saw her and commended her before Pharaoh. The woman was taken into Pharaoh's house, and he entreated Abraham well for her sake. And he had sheep and oxen, he asses and men servants and maid servants, and she asses and camels. The Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarah, Abram's wife. And Pharaoh called Abram and said, what is this that thou hast done unto me? Why didst thou not tell me that she was thy wife? Why saidest thou, she is my sister, so I might have taken her to me to wife? Now therefore, behold thy wife, take her and go thy way. Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him. They sent him away and his wife and all that he had.
Okay. So this is actually the first time this occurred, and we'll read again in Genesis chapter 20, verses 1 through 18. It occurred again with Abimelech. Go ahead and turn to Genesis chapter 20. Adam, can you read that, please? Yep, Genesis 20, 1 through 18, please. Don't worry about it, I do too.
Now Abraham said of Sarah his wife, she is my sister, and Abimelech king of Ur sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, indeed, you are a dead man because of the woman you have taken, for she is a man's wife. But Abimelech had not come near her, and he said, Lord, will you slay a righteous nation also? Did he not say to me,
she is my sister. And she even said, herself said, he is my brother. And the integrity of my heart and the innocence of my hands, I have done this. And God said to him in a dream, yes, I know that you did this in the integrity of your heart. For I also withheld you from sinning against me. Therefore, I did not let you touch her. Now, therefore, restore the man's wife, for he is a prophet. And he will pray for you, and you shall live. But if you do not restore her, know that you shall surely die, and you and all who are yours. So Abimelech rose early in the morning, called his servants, and told these things in their hearing. And the men were very much afraid. And Abimelech called Abraham and said to him, what have you done to us? How have I offended you that you have brought on me and on my kingdom a great sin? You have done deeds to me that ought not to be done. And Abimelech said to Abraham, what did you have in view that you have done this thing? And Abraham said, because I thought surely the fear of God is not in this place, and they will kill me on the account of my wife. But indeed, she is truly my sister. She is the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother. And she became my wife. And it came to pass when God caused me to wander from my father's house, that I said to her, this is your kindness that you should do for me. In every place wherever I go, say of me, he is my brother. And Abimelech took sheep, oxen, male and female servants, and gave them to Abraham, and he restored Sarah, his wife, to him. And Abimelech said, see, my land is before you. Dwell where it pleases you. And Sarah said, behold, I have given your brother 1,000 pieces of silver. Indeed, this vindicates you before all who are with you, and before everybody. Thus she was rebuked. And Abraham prayed to God, and God healed Abimelech, his wife, and his female servants, and they bore children. For God had closed up all the wounds of the house of Abimelech because of Sarah, Abraham's wife.
Thank you, Adam. So a lot of reading there, but I wanted to, so you can see the historical piece of it and when things occurred. So we see that this was planned a long time ago. It was a plan by Abraham, agreed upon by Sarah. And we see here the reason that they came up with this plan. Like I said earlier, was it a good plan? It worked out. But it only worked out because God was in control. And God controlled the people that were involved in their lives. Because he told Abraham in Genesis that he was going to bless him, correct? He's going to, you know, if anyone is against Abraham, they're against God. So God was with Abraham and Sarah this whole time. Even though they made some bad decisions, this was not maybe a good decision to make, but it worked out. Yes, sir. Yes, he was.
So then he taught a whole lot of other people. I mean, you follow your king. If he can't do this, we can't either.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, to his benefit, or maybe to his credit, he didn't know that Sarah was Abraham's wife, did he? So if he'd have known that, I wonder if he'd have done the same thing. I don't think so. So based on, that's why he was upset with Abraham, as we read here in Genesis chapter 20, that's why he was upset at Abraham for lying to him and Sarah. And I thought it was kind of interesting when he came to the part to rebuke, though. Which person did he rebuke? We just read it. Who did he rebuke?
Abimelech.
Yeah, Abimelech rebuked who? Sarah. Now, so Abraham, guess what? He gave Abraham money, livestock, you know, said, hey, take whatever land you want. just get out of here, you know what I mean? But to Sarah, he rebuked. So this must have been pretty tough. It's very embarrassing, you think about it. It's very embarrassing on Abraham, because Abraham's a man, right? His job is to lead, protect his family. But Abraham put his wife in a pretty weird type of predicament, right? Think about that. These guys took Sarah and they took her into their houses. So Abraham and Sarah were separated. Okay? I really don't know how much time went by, but there was some time that went by there where they were separated. But it put Sarah in a tough place, correct? Because she has to obey the king, right? It was the law back then. You could not disobey a king. So it's like when David ordered Bathsheba to come to his house, technically Bathsheba could have said no, but David could have done more to her. As far as, like, back then, kings had all power. Yes, Eddie. It's,
when you start putting all this together, you know, with 1 Peter 3 and verse 6, where she's commended as a godly wife, this morning, Dina and I were talking, and when you go over to Proverbs 31, and you take a look at a few of the verses there, like in verse 11 and 12, the heart of her husband does safely trust in her, so that he shall no need of spoil. She will do him good and not evil all the days of her life. And then in verse 23, her husband is known in the gates when he sitteth among the elders of the land. When you take a look at those passages of the godly woman in Proverbs 31, of the godly wife, and then you go over to Sarah, she fits a lot of these characteristics.
No doubt.
And in verse 13 of chapter 12, we're told there, I think, why she lied. Because protect her husband.
Correct.
And that's what Abraham plays on. He plays on that, would you do this so that I can be protected? So she does it.
Right.
While it's not said in 20, that's the reason, I think this would indicate why she went through with that.
Right.
It was for the good of her husband, not so much for the good of herself. And when you take a look at the description of Abraham, all through the first parts of Genesis, he was wealthy. Everywhere he went, every place that he moved, the kings and the rulers come to him.
They know him.
They know him.
Yeah.
And the reason why they're able to know him, Proverbs 31 indicates why, is again, he had a wife like he had.
Right.
He didn't have to worry so much. There were some times he had to, and anytime any family, there are times when there's going to have both parents take care of the problems.
Right.
But for the vast majority of the time, it seems to indicate he didn't have to worry about what was going on in his home. Because Sarah was a godly wife. She was
right.
A godly woman.
Yes, sir.
And I think also just kind of throw out there, he's the father of all the nations.
Mm-hmm.
He's through whom Christ is going to come.
Yep.
And it's not just because of him.
No, no.
I think it was both of them. That's why God chose this couple.
Right.
That's why the promises were made to Abraham. So Sarah really stands out, I think, as a godly spouse.
Oh, definitely.
Yes, she had her mistakes just like Abraham
right.
did, just like David did.
Right.
But at the same time, boy, when you start breaking it down individually in her life, she's a pretty respected woman.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. So I hope I'm not portraying her as not as, I hope I'm not. Because she's definitely an example of faith. The things it mentions is for her learning. Because just like Sarah and Abraham in our lives, we deal with struggles ourselves, right? And we react to these things, and our reaction causes other actions, correct? So we can see, based on what's written here, about this decision, this plan that they had, the consequences of it, okay? So we're lucky to have it, but it helps us understand more of, like Eddie was talking about how Sarah was a obedient, faithful, virtuous woman, okay? She called Abraham Lord. Not in the sense that she was calling Abraham a god, but that's the respect she had for him.
And even if you look at when she gives Abraham her servants, you read that, and I don't want to get into how is that all scriptural, God winked at Abraham.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Best for her family.
Oh, good point, yeah.
That's what we see. Abraham's fear was for his life.
Right.
Sarah
Right.
She really stands out.
Oh, definitely.
Ways in Genesis. When you start thinking of it like that, I think she stands out, put together what Peter said, as a godly wife.
Oh, definitely.
It was her family that she was focused on.
She was a leader. She was a leader. And Abraham often listened to her, right? When she talked, Abraham listened. You know, and we'll read more about that. We look at what, when she came up with a plan to conceive a son through her handmaid Hagar. Again, it's one of those things. You know, I think around 20, I'm guessing here, this is not, you know, but I'm thinking around 25 years passed between the first time God, told her that they were going to have a son and bear a child. And then before she actually took matters in her own hands by giving Hagar, her handmaid, to Abraham to conceive a son. So some time passed by. So like I said, 25 years or even a year sometimes, even 2 hours sometimes is long for us, right? We're not people who are very patient, you know. So you can imagine the, you know, year after year, prayer after prayer, you know, God's promises. They just, sometimes we as humans don't feel he's going to deliver. We sing a song sometimes called what? In His Time. And, you know, in His time, he's going to do what he promises. God cannot lie. So he wasn't lying to Sarah and Abraham. You know, but they were getting up there in age. You know, she's 90. And 89 when they were promised the second time, and Abraham was 99. And Isaac was born when she was 90. So, you know, you think about it, that's well beyond. If somebody had a baby today at 90, what would y'all think? I mean, even past age maybe 55. I mean, it'd be a miracle, wouldn't it? So she was well beyond childbearing years. And she thought that, hey, you know, I gotta help things out here. So, again, like Eddie said, though, everything she did was really not for herself. I don't think she did anything for herself. Everything she did was in the honor and for the favor of her husband. And, first of all, God, right? So, first of all, God, then her family, her husband. So, that's why she's listening to Genesis chapter 11, as Eddie stated. Is why she's mentioned by Apostle Paul in 1 Peter and also Galatians. Okay, so you see the consequences of anybody that actually took Sarah in. We see these leaders that took her in. These are the two times we have mentioned. There could have been more times this happened, you know, but these are the two times we have mentioned. But there were consequences to be paid, and this was because God was looking out for Sarah, looking out for Abraham. So God took care of him. Do we have any other comments or questions you want to make on this subject here? The part we just talked about. Okay. So we're going to move on. Turn to Genesis chapter 16, 1 through 9. My time went by quick. All right, so Genesis chapter 16, 1 through 9, here it's recorded. Now Sarah, Abraham's wife, had borne him no children. And she had an Egyptian maidservant whose name was Hagar. So Sarah said to Abraham, "See now the Lord has restrained me from having children, or bearing children rather. Please go unto my maid, perhaps I shall obtain children by her." And Abraham heeded the voice of Sarai. Then Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, her maid, the Egyptian, and gave her to her husband, Abram, to be his wife. After Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, so he went into Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, her mistress became despised in her eyes. Then Sarai said to Abram, "My wrong be upon you. I gave my mind into your embrace. I gave my maid into your embrace. And when she saw that she had conceived, I became despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between you and me." So Abram said to Sarai, Indeed, your mind is in your hand. Do to her as you please. And when Sarai dealt harshly with her, she fled from her presence. Now the angel of the Lord found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, by the spring on the way to Shur. And he said, Hagar, Sarah's maid, where have you come from, and where are you going? She said, I'm fleeing from the presence of my mistress, Sarai. The angel of the Lord said to her, return to your mistress and submit yourself under her hand. And the angel of the Lord said to her, I will multiply your descendants exceedingly, so they shall not be counted for a multitude. And the angel of the Lord said to her, behold, you are with child, and you shall bear a son. You shall call his name Ishmael, because the Lord has heard your affliction. He shall be a wild man. His hand shall be against every man, and every man's hand against him. And he shall dwell in the presence of all his brethren. Then she called the name of the Lord who spoke to her, you are the God who sees. For she said, Have I also seen him who sees me? Therefore the well was called Beer Lahia Roy. Observe, it is between Kadesh and Bered. So Hagar bore Abraham a son, and Abraham named the son whose Hagar born Ishmael, which means God hears. Abraham was 86 years old when Hagar bore Ishmael to Abraham. I think I said 89, but it's 86. My mistake. So I don't have very much time left. We'll continue on next week. But one thing I want to say about this, from being a soldier who has, dealt with firsthand the war on terrorism, when I read this, I often tell people this. Leaders, people don't understand the history of Ishmael and his descendants. Okay? So in my perspective, I kind of wish Sarah hadn't done this, because Ishmael is the father of the Arabs, father of the Muslims. Okay? They trace their genealogy back to Ishmael. So the same people we're dealing with today, where God said, you'll be a wild man, every man's hand will be against you, and their hand will be against every man. That's what we're dealing with today. So again, sometimes there's consequences to be paid. Sometimes they last a long time. So we have to be careful when we make decisions for God and do things in our time versus God's time. But hey, please take a look at the questions. We'll continue this study. I think it's a great study. I appreciate the comments. I know I talked a lot today compared to last time, but I promise you next week I'll let you guys talk a lot more. You didn't have the questions this time. I do. It'd be a little bit different. So I appreciate your attendance and your participation.